This is Dave Summers, and welcome to AMA's Edgewise, where you will hear fresh insights from recognized thought leaders across a wide range of subject matter. AMA's Edgewise is brought to you by the American Management Association. Online social networking is a reality. The millions of people who have a MySpace page or who use Google know this. But for today's companies, the question remains, how can we profit from the crowds who are swarming all over the internet? Drawing on their own research and insights from an enormous community of more than 4,000 people, Barry Liebert and John Spector have written a book that reveals what works and what doesn't when you are building community into your decision-making and business processes. We're happy to have with us today one of those authors of We Are Smarter Than Me, Barry Liebert. Barry is currently the CEO of Mazinga, a provider of business social networks that help companies improve their performance by leveraging the power of community. Barry, welcome to the program.
Fantastic.
Now, the name of your book is We Are Smarter Than Me.
Correct.
And I'm speaking with Barry Liebert. His company's name is Mazinga. What is Mazinga? What does that mean?
It's Swahili for we and beehive. We really wanted to use the name we for our company. The original name of the company was Shared Insights, which is the concept of sharing information. But we were not able to buy the word we. It's owned by a movie producer on the West Coast. He wanted $1 million. Go Big Daddy had it available for $7.50 in Swahili. And we thought that was a better decision economically in today's world. And Mazinga is in the business of doing nothing but helping 280 large companies build large social networks for their employees and their customers.
Right.
I saw a great piece on C-SPAN, which you would have loved, which was a friend of mine, David Weinberger, wrote the book, The Cloutran Manifesto, was doing a speech.
Fantastic book.
Great guy. He's doing a speech at the Library of Congress and saying that God was the last person who wrote the written word that was forever indelible, and that there were 9 monks or 11 monks who turned that into the Bible. That was sometime along 2,000 years ago. Now the problem is he was saying that the Library of Congress and the concept of God are dead. Now here's why. Not that he's saying the religion's dead. It's because all of our words are indelible. They're all permanent. They're all shareable. We all have our Bibles. They're called Flickr today. We all have our Facebooks. They're all permanent and they're all usable by others. And if you have 1 billion people sharing the common word, think about the power of society for the first time. I think it's a really cool concept that says the Library of Congress, which was keeping the word for a series of books, how do they keep the word now for every single thing that you and I posted on the web? It's an impossible thought.
It's impossible, but as explosive and revolutionary and enlightening as this whole discussion is, you got so many old schoolers who are still so wrapped up in intellectual property, so wrapped up in the legal aspects of any type of relationship. How do you approach those types of arguments?
Business is going to be the way it is for many years to come. We are not going to become social businesses for a long time. We've been doing this for 6.5 years. You're not going to have leaders that go, oh my gosh, I'm part of the social environment. They really are part of the social environment, but they're not going to think that way. They're going to think, okay, I have to protect my brand. I have to protect my intellectual property. I have to protect my training. I have to protect my courseware. They don't realize that what they really would do if they were really believers, what you and I are saying, they would make all that courseware their customers, and they let their customers add their own content to it, and it would expand magnificently and exponentially. And their brands are already kept by their customers. Example is AMA. If your customers didn't like your brand, they would never come and train here. And so I think companies who are smart and forward-thinking will go, wow, like Nike's doing, let me turn my brand over to my constituents. Let them be the keepers of my brand and my intellectual property. If you look at what Nike's doing with their running shoes, let them design my future shoes.
You can use Nike as an example if you like, but walk me through an example where a company can derive economic benefit equals make money from a wiki type of interaction.
So let's start with some really well-known companies, Procter & Gamble. Everybody knows Procter & Gamble is a major advertiser during the soaps hours, midday hours, and they're basically broadcasting at women primarily who stay at home and don't work. Now, many women have gone back to work, so their viewing audience has shrunk over time. What they realized was those 850,000 mom that are daily viewers could be part of a community called Vocal Point, and they could help them design their next product. And they could outsource to those moms, now called crowdsourcing, to those moms who care about those products, the design and delivery and sales and marketing for a new Dawn product. So I think, well, that's sort of cool. As opposed to broadcasting and a bunch of moms are sitting at home all day long, why not co-opt those moms?
Let me tell you why I want this. Let me tell you why it's the next greatest thing. In essence, having them as your research and development.
Correct. Lathley, who was the chairman, said, listen, I don't think I have a monopoly on the smart people in the world. Let me not think about, first, he said, the 5 or 8,000 people who are researchers. Let me think about all of my employees as researchers. Then he said, well, hold on a minute here. Why do I even think those are the best researchers, all my employees? Let me use anybody who's interested in my products as people who can research and develop my products and crowdsource to them the development because they might have real profound interest in it.
So a smart company these days is providing the opportunity to get these people together to facilitate, throwing a picnic, putting some type of social space in place for these people to solve their own problems, so to speak.
They're the words of the future. Facilitate social space, throw a picnic, provide entertainment. That's human interaction. And once you create those spaces and you do it without censorship, and that's why I love this environment now, what people will do is come and they will contribute. Look what Linux is doing to Microsoft.
Open source.
Open source. Yeah. So think of this as open innovation or open employment. I love crowdsourcing versus outsourcing. Outsourcing is let's take jobs in America and let's send them to China and India because it's less expensive labor there. It's sort of an interesting idea. Personally, I don't like it any more than they would outsource their people to America.
So what's crowdsourcing?
Crowdsourcing is find a group of people no matter where they are in the world who's interested in your business and let them have a chance at designing whatever it is you want. The product, the service, the customer support, the sales, the marketing, and give them a chance to do it better than you do it. Much better idea. I think crowdsourcing is outsourcing 2.0. It says, instead of reducing labor by shipping ashore, say, okay, well, hold on a minute here. We have all these customers at AMA who come in every single day. How do we know they're not better course designers than we are? How do we know that they're not going to leave better content behind than we are? Give them a shot, give them the tools, and let them design it for us.
How did you get started doing all of this stuff?
My story is it's 1997 and my wife's a dean of continuing ed at Harvard Medical and Dental School. And she says to me, why don't businesses care about their constituents? And I said, Ellen, I don't get why you'd ask that question. She said, Barry, they don't care. I said, that's impossible. She says, Barry, think about this way. You go to a party and you don't know anybody's name. Assume they're your relatives or they're paying a lot to come to the party, like $35,000 in tuition. But you don't know their names. You don't have a connection. After they leave, having paid for the courses, you still don't remember their names. You can't tell me businesses care if they can't remember the names of their customers or their employees. They have no profound relationship with them. Either they do or don't care. And I began to realize my wife's right. And the first book I tried to write was called My Wife's Right. And everybody used to say about what? And my answer was about everything.
About everything.
Everything when it comes to relationships and businesses had to realize that in a world where anybody can deliver anything, all that's left is you and me. It's not these microphones. It's not the products. It's just you and me. That's all that's left.
And I also heard somewhere, I forget where I heard this, but the only real shortage there'll be, and there is right now, I guess as the future is now, is basically the human attention span. How many hours are there in a day to read email or to watch TV or to play a video game? Those are the only real limitations. How many thought cycles do you possess?
Correct. So think of it this way. I'm ex-McKinsey trained, and I saw Ian Davis, who's the chairman and CEO of McKinsey, write a piece last year that the only durable advantage companies have, only competitive and durable advantage is human interaction. That whether it be employees or customers, the world is fully connected in a quote-unquote flat world. And only thing that's left is our relationship, not whether or not you can design a better training program than somebody else can. I don't believe that. It's like suggesting McKinsey's better than Bain or BCG, or AMA is better than another training organization. You're not going to convince me my brother trained at BCG, Boston Consulting Group, I trained at McKinsey. You're not going to convince me there's any differentiation there.
What do you tell people who are non-believers? What do you tell people who are still very much tied to the old models and methods? You have to have encountered your share of serious skeptics with a capital S.
Serious skeptics? I went broke almost twice in the last 6.5 years trying this business. So I'm almost a skeptic myself now. I always say I look like I'm 53. I'm really 25, but aged 30 years in the last 6.5 years. You know, in all seriousness, most businesses are skeptics still. Literally most businesses, because they can't imagine that giving something away, profoundly giving something away, produces any return. And the basic example I give is there was a time when my kids were 5 and 7 and we got behind their bicycle and pushed them down the street and they were yelling, stop holding on. And my wife was yelling, if you let go, I'm going to kill you because they're going to kill themselves. They don't even ride bikes anymore. One's 20 and one's 17. They drive cars.
Right.
The more I let go of them, the more trusting I am of them, the more they give back. And what businesses haven't figured out is the more they give away to their customers, the more they trust them, the more they give to their employees, the more they trust them, the more empowered they feel and the more willing they are to give something back. They haven't gotten past the concept of what they think of as zero-sum game. What's yours, Dave, is mine, and what's mine is mine. It's very simple. If you've got some money, I want it, and I want my money as well. They have figured out sharing produces larger sets of returns, not small sets of returns.
Now it's time for You've Been Spotted with Kevin Lee. It's where we interview random people who are attending a workshop or seminar at one of our five executive conference centers. For more information on our executive conference centers and seminars, please visit our website, www.amanet.org. Here's Kevin.
To find out more about how to gain knowledge and insights by working with others, I talked to a couple of participants at AMA's top-selling seminar on critical thinking.
I am an accounts payable specialist in the pharmaceutical industry. I have actually taken a number of courses here at AMA. In particular, the reason why I chose this course was looking to move to the next level and being able to think outside of the box, not only use my own thinking style, but be aware of other people's thinking styles. Whether it's presenting or bouncing information off of somebody or a team environment, to be able to gain the information that you need, you have to cater your style towards that person's style to get the most out of your meeting or your interaction.
I have a manager who's really great and believes that it's important for us to stretch our minds and to learn more about different ways of thinking and how to get along with people. So he suggested the course to me, and I thought it was very interesting and decided that I would try it. We work every day, we're working so hard, and we're focused just on what it is we have to do. We expect everyone to think the way we do, and we're so focused on just our own personal experiences. But what we learned in this class is that we should be thinking about what everyone else is thinking, and then use that to better communicate, to find better ways to work together, and to ultimately focus on what our jobs are.
I think one of the biggest things at AMA is coming together as a group, learning as a team. Everything's done in a team, which is kind of interesting because that's how it really is out in the world, in the workforce. We've gotten to role play everything that we've done. It's a lot of fun. I have to say, AMA is not only a great learning experience, but a lot of fun.
It was great to learn the different steps that you'd need to go through to arrive at a solution. It was great to hear other people's point of view and their perspectives. I loved learning about what my side of the brain was thinking versus what other people's brains do and how they respond. And I think it really will help me learn to work better with other people. The steps that we learned to take going from defining what the problem is, the awareness, and actually being able to go through the steps to arrive at a solution. For me, that's critical because I will be using that in the workplace.
It would be great to get some feedback, so please drop us an email note at podcast@amanet.org or call us at 800-697-3406. That's 800-697-3406. Your email or phone message might be heard on a future episode. Thanks for taking us along. I'm Dave Summers, and you've been listening to AMA's Edgewise.